open the hearing for Wednesday, October 18th, and we have a quorum. Bill is off to where?
He's in Salem testifying on housing. Anyhow, he's in Salem advocating for our citizens.
No recognitions or proclamations, so we move directly to the consent calendar. Consent calendar are routine items or things they've previously heard. Is there anything you'd like to make a comment or change on the consent?
I'll move for approval of the consent calendar.
All those in favor, or second, then all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. We're down to public hearings, and we have a legalization for Ocean View Drive and Yahats. And so I open the public hearing now, Wayne.
Please.
I'll open the public hearing and ask for the staff report.
Commissioners, if I might, to start off with, this is the time we've set for the legalization, a hearing on the legalization of a portion of Ocean View Drive, County Road number 813 in Yahats. This is really a continuation of what's been a long and kind of arduous road sometimes, that, excuse the pun there, that started with some litigation that when I first came here around the existence of a county road known as County Road 804. And basically, the culmination of that was an arrangement in which the parties agreed to the vacation of County Road 804, but we still continued Ocean View Drive, Marine Drive, as the primary source of travel through that particular part of Yahats. Part of the settlement arrangement with the parties, including the city of Yahats, was the county would transfer Ocean View Drive, Marine Drive, to Yahats. And normally when we do transfers, road transfers from the county to cities, we try to make sure that there aren't any issues around the location or description of the area to be transferred. So occasionally we have to engage in this process of a legalization of the county road. And so we began that process, and again, that's hopefully to lead to the transfer of the road to the city of Yahats. Subsequently, we've learned from the property owners there's some concerns with the legalization, and we may actually have some ways to arrange to complete the transfer that the county wants to undertake with the city without having to do this legalization, or maybe only a small portion of the legalization. So we're exploring those particular alternatives, but we'd already started the process. I do want to enter into record a couple of things. The affidavit of service on the necessary property owners in accordance with law, the affidavit of posting, and the proof of publication of notice of this particular hearing. So we're going to ask you today to actually just receive the report from the Public Works Director. He's also going to enter into the record some letters we've received on this particular matter, to listen to any testimony that might occur. And you've got the standards in here. The chair will talk about that in a minute. But then we're going to recommend to you that we actually not close the hearing, but continue it out a few months so that we can continue our conversations with representatives from the city. And property owners will be apprised of what's going on with that particular, those conversations, and see if we can resolve the questions we've got around this short of doing the entire legalization, or maybe actually just dispense with the legalization in total. So I'm going to stop there and turn it over to Public Works Director Kenyon.
Good morning. I'm Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director. And what I'd like to start with is the map, so you kind of get a feel for what we're looking at here. This is the southwest corner of Yahats. This here is the beginning or the end, how you want to look at it, of the Yahats River. And Ocean View continues on from this point north, approximately half a mile, and then runs east back to 101. The right-of-way on Marine Drive and Ocean View down to this point is good and clean, clear. Everything fits. Road is traveled, fits well within the right-of-way, not an issue. Starting on 4th Street, 4th Street down to Pontiac is where we basically legalization has been proposed. This is where, as you can see in yellow, these are the areas where the road is traveled, basically runs over the ground is platted, and these, this yellow area is the reason for the attempt to legalize.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
So
the reason what?
So originally, when they, this is the original plat of the Ahans. The county road is traveled, runs along the basically the edge of the plat between the plat and the Pacific Ocean. These areas here are where the road is traveled, and the right-of-way as proposed basically overlaps with the property is platted. So these are the areas that we were are attempting to clean up. There are seven property owners that are adjacent to the road as traveled. Three private properties here on the south. You got state park property for the middle section, and then you have these three lots up here. We actually have letters from four of the property owners. I actually spoke on the phone to a fifth one who was here. I did not hear from this ownership, and we did not hear anything from state parks.
And Roy, could you, for the record, just enter in the names of those four letter?
Yes.
And I will be entering into the record a letter from Niedert and Mistrek, which is property on the south end, the middle property there. Judy Kaufman, who is actually also right next to the ownership. That would be the ownership next to Pontiac Street. I got a letter from Carrie Kemp, who is the third owner on the south end. And I also have a letter from Mr. Urbanski, who is the property on the far north. I spoke to Sandy Sturgis, who actually owns the second property from the north. And like I said, I did not talk to or hear from the other ownership.
So just to clarify, obviously I know the state parks property. Which is the other property that we have not heard from?
We have not heard from state parks, and we have not heard from this property here, Husky or
Husky. Okay, thank you.
Anyway, they received the same notifications that everyone else did. I just did not get anything back from them. And as Wayne said, it's pretty typical. It's normal process for us when we're preparing a road for a jurisdictional transfer to clear up any oddities, anything that doesn't line up. We've always attempted to do that. This was another attempt to do that. Now, the big issue for the private property owners is the fact that their lots are already substandard, and by moving right-of-way lines, it affects their setback requirements on their structures. Typically, county roads are those roads that are outside the city limits. You're dealing with much larger lots. The moving of the right-of-way in or out or wherever doesn't usually have the same impact that it does when you're basically in town. You're dealing with lots that are 50 by 100 or smaller. Owners try to utilize as much property as they possibly can. And in some cases, they've done that. Well, with the proposed right-of-way, it basically moves things in a little tighter. Setback requirements become a lot more critical. And so that's really what has generated the interest in this legalization, whereas a lot of our other legalizations really have gone through with little or no interest, but it's been primarily because of where they're at. And this is a street. This is not a road. This is a street that should be
in city limits, or is in the city limits, but should be in the jurisdiction of the city, and we're attempting to hand it over.
Okay. So, any questions?
Not this one.
Now's the time for a public hearing, then?
Yep.
So, is there anyone here wishing to present information that controverts any matter presented by the board in these proceedings or alleges any new matter relevant to the proceedings under ORS 368.206? We also receive any claims for damages authorized under ORS 368.211. So, public hearings.
So, Roy, I guess you can step back for a minute and let folks come forward, right? Come one at a time. And we do ask if you want to testify. And we do have the written materials that are in the record. But if you want to say anything more today, would you please sign in the sheet in there and come forward and identify your name and address for our records. Doesn't sound like there's anybody else here, so I think we can move on to staff recommendations.
Okay, the next steps, Wayne, just...
As I indicated at the front end of this particular hearing, we're working with the city to see if we can't solve the questions that we have around this, short of actually undertaking the legalization or undertaking the full legalization. There may be one specific area we might want to talk about a little bit more. But those conversations are prepared to go. We've now had, I'm ready to talk with the city attorney for the city of Yahats, and then the city has appointed a committee to meet with Mr. Kenyon and myself to see what we can do to resolve this. And I actually think there are some solutions here short of the having to do the full legalization that might be acceptable to all the parties involved. So what I would do is recommend that we continue the hearing to a time and date specific to allow us an opportunity to meet with folks and see if we can't come back with something to resolve this, or if we even need to proceed. If during that time we reach a resolution that's acceptable to everybody that allows us to not proceed with the legalization, I'll prepare an order for the board in which we actually withdraw the request for the legalization, and that'll complete the process doing that. Otherwise, we'll come back. So the date that I'm recommending you make a motion to continue the hearing to is January 10th, 2017 at 9:30 a.m. in this room.
2018.
All right. God. No, it can't be.
Yeah. Thank you. Either that or you're a pretty tricky lawyer.
No. I'm already going first for 18. January 10th, 2018. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
I'd like to, I guess, clarify a couple of things since I've now heard all the comments that are going to be made at this time. I guess, number one, it's not a requirement that this road be legalized
No.
to transfer it to the city.
No.
Number two, it's a road within the Yahats city limits, but it's under our jurisdiction.
Yes.
So, number three, I guess, the reason we're considering legalization is that under normal circumstances, that would be the process before we transfer to the other jurisdiction, and it's usually done to resolve issues so that we're not transferring property that has issues to another jurisdiction.
Exactly, and usually it's at the behest of the city.
Okay, and that would be my next point. Yeah. So, again, the reason we started this process is that in discussing with the city, it was their request or mutually understood that legalization would be a part of the process. But as we've gotten further into it, there are some issues, and in theory, if the city's agreeable, we can transfer the property, the road as it is now, if the city's agreeable.
Yeah, that's in
okay.
essence.
So
that's what's...
you're going to work with the city and mm-hmm. try to come up with a compromise that makes everybody happy.
Right. And I should note that, again, this has been going on for a lot of years, all those things around this, and so our understandings were really with a previous mayor and previous even council in terms of saying we recognize we had some issues with the road description versus the road as used and traveled for the last 10 years. So this was, you know, again, the normal courses that we have, the cities want us to fix all these things before we transfer. But I think in this case, we're finding in our discussions, there may be alternatives.
Right, and also, you said transfer the road as is, and that's not really entirely true. As is,
as the
legal side. Right. We also, as part of the negotiations, have agreed to make improvements to the road surface to bring it up to standards, so we're not actually transferring a maintenance issue.
Right. No, I appreciate the clarification.
Sure.
Okay, then I'll continue the dates.
I'll move to continue the public hearing on legalization of Ocean View Drive until January 10th, 9th. Okay, continue the public hearing until January 10th, 2018 at 9:30 a.m. here in Newport.
So I'll second the motion to 2018.
Well, you finally got it right. Third time's a charm.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. So we move down for discussion and information items. Ordinance number 498 relating to the special road district amending LC 6.480 to convert Star Creek Special Road District from appointed to elected governing board. Gary.
Okay, actually, Mr. Chair, we skipped the petition. There's one item before that petition.
There's an item B. I jumped down. Well, sorry. We'll do the move back then the public hearing petition from Greg Torlin and Mary Herbert to withdraw from the Toledo Rural Fire Protection District.
Mr. Chair, would you open the hearing, please?
And I will open the hearing.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Jerry Herbage. I'm an assistant legal counsel for Lincoln County. And this is the time and place for a first hearing on the petition from Greg Torlin and Mary Holbert to withdraw their property from the Toledo Rural Fire Protection District. Now, you have your packet in front of you, and it might be helpful if I briefly went through what you have. That'll be made part of the record, but it will help explain concisely where we are. Okay. So, the first part, you have a draft order. If the board wants to proceed and send this to the second hearing, this would be an order, if it's acceptable to you, that you could approve. That order incorporates by reference, if you turn the page, the petition to withdraw from the district. And I think this petition is particularly helpful for you because this is somewhat of an unusual proceeding. You don't get too many withdrawals. You get a lot more annexations. But this includes the information required by the statute, but in addition, the justification that the petitioners put down. And you may want to have some questions. Greg Torlin is present, and when I'm done, I think he would be happy to comment on the reasons why he and Mary Holbert have submitted this petition. But to make a long story short, the justification is largely that their property is on the extreme edge of the district and that there's a long delay before any fire equipment or first responder equipment could make it there. So if you follow on to what's attached, you'll see that there's a legal description of the property and a map, and we'll show you where this property is located. It's at the edge of the district. Then what also is important following that is a letter from the Toledo Rural Fire Protection District. It's signed by their fire chief, William Ewing, and he indicates that the board of the district met on June 21st, 2017, and they approved the request. So in a sense, it's consensual in that the district, as both the district and the petitioners, have asked for this action. In accordance with the law, we both published and posted notice, and that's what follows here. So the process is convoluted. You and I have talked about how Chapter 198 is not very well written. There is no expedited process for withdrawal, unlike annexation. So if you approve this action today, it is not a final matter. It would be set for a second hearing. We would publish again. The second hearing would be on November 15th. And there's a section in there under the law that if there's enough remonstrances, then the matter would be set for election. Otherwise, you can do the final order. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. No. Thank you very much. But Mr. Cortland,
I have a question.
Yes.
Obviously, it's consensual between the two parties, which on the surface makes it seem rather routine. And I recognize there'd be revenue tax consequences to the fire district, but would there be tax consequences or revenue consequences to the county?
No, no.
But there wouldn't be. I didn't think so, but yeah. I wanted to ask. Okay.
That's thank correct.
You. Okay. So, Carlin, would you like to come up or whoever speaking? Else is speaking for you.
Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen.
Hi. My name is Greg Torlin.
I have a question. It says here that as it stands now, even though you're in the district, you're in considered a class 10.
Correct.
And so you're not going to improve a class by moving out. Why? What's the reason behind it? It's just the fact that you're too far from the district. Is it cost you more? I don't see how it costs you more if your classification stays the same.
So are you asking why is it a class 10?
Well, you're a class 10 because you're so far from the station, which means you're basically unprotected.
Correct.
I understand class 10.
Correct.
Commissioner, I think what I understand what you're saying is that, you know, is your insurance going to be any less expensive because you're moving outside of the district or more expensive?
Right.
That's what he's really getting to.
Well, let me bring a point up. When have you ever seen your insurance drop? It's not going to drop.
Honestly,
it hasn't dropped.
We have, and that's I think what's confusing about it.
Mine has.
We have had, I know, but that's and that's why we're kind of curious about this. We just went through a series of annexations of the Toledo Rural Fire Protection District, basically consensual annexations, a whole bunch of them. And the reasons why the people did it is when they came within the boundaries of the Rural Fire Protection District, and some of these are fairly far, you know, afield from the central fire location in there. But they, to a person, looked at this thing, and they all checked with their insurance companies, and their insurance rates dropped when they went into the district. So we're just kind of curious if you checked that out.
I did, and that's a good point. I appreciate the clarification.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When I spoke with Chief Ewing at the Toledo Rural Fire Protection District board meeting, that topic of discussion came up.
Absolutely.
And until there were some improvements made, which was not predicted for the foreseeable future, such as a fire hydrant nearby, you know, maybe a rural fire protection district station out in that neck of the woods, there was no forecast in terms of having a financial benefit for me in terms of having a class 10 or a class 5 or what have you. I also checked with my insurance agent, Tom Worth over there in Corvallis, spoke with Tom for a while about this, and he basically said, hey, you're out of luck.
No difference going in or out for
no.
you?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's what I was told.
Okay.
Now, of course, that can all change down the road, too.
Sure. But that was the curious part with this. Because
right.
Again,
yeah.
We just went through this big annexation process.
Right.
And they were all coming in and saying, we checked with our agents, and we got a better rate when we were in the district than being outside of it.
Yeah, and that's true. And that's true. And I also spoke with one of the other board members there, and he told me that, you know, there had been some modifications made, and he received some relief from his insurance company as well. But
and the secondary thing, just to make sure it's kind of, you know, understood, is that, you know, rural fire protection districts will respond even to out-of-district properties. And there is always the possibility, if they respond to a fire on your property and they engage in services, they have the ability to charge for those services. Whereas if you're in the district, you have you've got the protection of being in the district.
Yeah, I understand that.
I assume you did. I just assumed you did. No, it's just interesting to always see why people pull.
Yeah.
And we haven't had one of these in a withdrawal of this type because of those particular reasons.
Right, I understand that.
So, okay.
Yeah. This whole process, it's been a challenge. It's been interesting, but it's like I told Mr. Herbert here a while back, it's kind of like it's really easy to get married.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to get divorced. And there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through, and that's what this process has been like.
So. We understand that.
Well, in that case, why the divorce?
It's always financial reasons.
In Oregon, it's considered no fault. So I think what he's saying is, as long as there's a consent from everybody, there's no fault. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's my feeling. It's consensual, so...
Right. Yeah.
Between the two parties.
No, it was just more for edification for us. Because sure. It's unusual for us sure. to see a withdrawal.
But yeah. I think it's been about 20 years since the county has had one. Went to the records.
Rob, before Wayne's time?
I don't want you gentlemen getting bored, and I thought we'd mix it up a little bit, throw you a bone and give you something else to think about.
Something new and different.
Right.
Exactly. So I have the map here, but I'm having a hard time identifying the piece of property we're talking about.
Okay.
Since it's not... To my eye,
you might have a good version. You might explain that.
I know the property.
I know what
it is. I'm sorry.
Well, the best I can do for you on this particular piece of property is, in terms of describing it, without going into the boundaries, is.
If you want to just hold up the map, put your finger.
Well, you can see that it's right there.
Over here.
Yeah.
Okay.
But for the record,
if you can see that, I want your eye doctor.
As part of our due diligence, we did run the map and legal description through the county, as we generally do, and then over to the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue has pre-approved the description and the map and legal description. And what you have in front of you is not a very good copy. So hopefully, I think what we'll send off will show up a little bit better.
Congratulations, because that's the most difficult part from our perspective, is any change, annexation, withdrawal, otherwise, is getting those descriptions accepted by Department of Revenue.
Especially out in that neck of the woods.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm fine.
Okay, so you do close the hearing, if you would like, and then there is a draft order that you could move to.
Can we act on the order today, or do we need to?
There'll be a second order later. This isn't a final order, but this order would set the next hearing.
Right.
And it's got the statutory right.
order. It's at the front end of here.
Make sure that's the legalization for this argument. Okay.
So I guess I'm confused. Do we want to continue this public hearing until a future date, or?
Well, you can close this public hearing and then adopt a motion to adopt that order, and that'll set the second hearing.
Okay, I will close this public hearing and set an order for to be published in the News Times and general circulation for September 29th. Am I doing this right?
No.
Actually, the order.
What I would ask is that there be a motion to approve the order,
right.
which I've attached to your materials.
Right.
It's okay, right before the petition.
I'll make a motion to approve the order. Sorry, I was doing the notice of claims here inside that order.
Okay.
When you handed it to me, that's what.
Okay. Are we clear on the motion?
The motion is to adopt an order to withdraw a parcel of real property from the Toledo Rural Fire Protection District, and it sets a hearing date, second hearing date.
Okay. That was moved by Chair Thompson, and I will second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes.
All right.
Boy, you messed this up.
I didn't mess it up.
Used to doing that.
We've never finished. That's original. I don't think we'll probably see another one in my career.
Does that mean you're a short timer?
Probably.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we get it moved down again.
That stuff is more routine.
Yeah. And with this item B, then, no discussion. Now we're down to discussion information on item A. Ordinance 498 relating to Special Road District amending LCC 6.48 to convert Star Creek Special Road District from appointed to elected.
Commissioners, that's
what?
Just for the record here, is there any request that this ordinance be read in full?
He would jump
hearing none, then I'm going to read it by title again, just for the record. Ordinance number 498 relating Road Districts amending LCC 6.480 to convert Star Creek Special Road District from appointed to an elected governing board.
Again, for the record, Jerry Herbich, Assistant County Council. I'll be brief here. This has come before you on October 4th. Today is the second reading, meaning that you can adopt it if you wish. There's two things that happened with respect to our current code 6.480. One is Star Creek would be added as a special road district where the board members are put in office by election, and then there's a new subsection 8 that explains how that will happen, and what it would do is it would set the election for the third Tuesday in 2018. So we'd have an election next year. And then what it would do is it would shorten the terms initially so that they would coincide with special districts, which have elections on odd years, right? So what we're going to do is, even though the first one's going to be on an even year, it'll get shifted to the odd years, and then everything will be in alignment. We've worked closely with Dana at the clerk's office, and I'd recommend that the board approve this. It's based upon complaints that you received about certain irregularities within the district that came to you at a public meeting in February. So that's my recommendation, but it is a second reading. You should see if anyone wants to comment on it.
Is there anyone here who'd like to make comment on the Special Road District change? Seeing none. Have you received anything?
No, I haven't received anything. I was just going to state that I think it's important that if there are questions, people understand that regardless of how the board members are determined, the county really has no authority to intervene in what decisions and how that board acts. So all we're doing is changing how the board is determined. And unless there's any other comments, I move for approval of Ordinance 498 relating to Special Road Districts, amending LCC 6.480 to convert Star Creek Special Road District from appointed to an elected governing board.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So that passes.
Thank you.
Now we move down to adopting provision for ORS 307.540 through 307.548 for exemption from property tax for nonprofit corporation low-income housing in the city of Newport. And Wayne,
Commissioners, yes, this is something we've discussed on several occasions. You had a presentation by the city of Newport on the provisions of their ordinance number 2116 that made available within the corporate limits of the city this opportunity for a real property tax exemption for nonprofit corporation owned or leased low-income housing. Low-income housing is defined by statute and incorporated into the city's ordinance. What we would be doing is adopting a resolution that would allow the exemption to be granted totally for the property. Because entities that a board acts as the governing body for, which if we adopt this particular resolution, would include Lincoln County General Fund, Lincoln County Extension Service District, Lincoln County Transportation District, and Lincoln County Animal Services District, combined with the city of Newport's general levy and their urban renewal levy, exceed 51% of the taxes within the areas of the city that would be subject to this particular exemption, and therefore the entire property would be exempt. We've done this, as we've discussed before, for some projects in Lincoln City.
I'm going to clarify. It's not that the entire property would be exempt, but the property would be entirely exempt from property taxes.
Correct.
Thank you.
That is correct. The other features of this particular resolution, if it's adopted, is number one, is of course it would apply only within the city limits of the city of Newport. Two, the city would be responsible for processing the applications, and that's following the state law requirements and their own ordinance and code provisions. So they would be the ones that actually would look at the applications. When we've done it in other entities, we've been the ones that have had to deal with that. And then third, the most important thing that I think after I had some discussions with both the city and then talking to you, is I actually would have this particular resolution sunset in the year 2028. So it would be a 10-year initial examination of this. And basically, any project that came through in that 10 years that qualified for an exemption, they can continue on as long as they continue to be qualify for the exemption beyond 2028. But no new projects can come in place after that time until you've had an opportunity to review, or your successors, if you're not here in 2028, have an opportunity to review the program, see if it's working, see if it's effective, and then extend the program at that time. But I thought that was a provision that you would, based on our discussions, you would like to have, that actually does sunset, at least for an opportunity to review to see the effectiveness of the program.
Okay.
I want to note that what I've prepared is a draft resolution. I've gotten some comments back from the city, very minor. The main thing is, and Christy, this is just a note for you, that the city changed their numbering format for some of the exhibits that were attached to the ordinance, which I've reflected in the draft resolution. But we'll need to make sure we get the appropriate docs assigned to, or at the back end of this thing, that we include in the final version of this. So.
Okay. Now, move this one.
Mm-hmm. I'll just comment that obviously housing, low-income housing, affordable housing, workforce housing, whatever you want to call it, is a big challenge to understate the challenge. But I think this is certainly a tool that can help, so I support it, and I'll move for adoption of the provisions of ORS.
This is a draft version today. I need to incorporate some changes. Oh, so what I'll do is I want the consensus to move forward. And I'll move it forward.
I give you consent.
That's consensus. Yeah. Okay.
I'll withdraw my adoption and say I am part of the consensus.
Yeah. Great. And then we'll get you the final version of this.
I'm just trying to get things done here, Wayne.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Okay, and I agree with that. So we move down to item C, adoption of provision for ORS 307.600 to 307.637 for an exemption from property tax for the qualifying multi-unit properties in proportion of the city of Newport.
Okay, commissioners, this particular resolution, you may recall, coincides with city ordinance number 2115, and it applies to multiple family rental housing. And it's one of the changes I need to make in the draft we did here, is emphasize that this is rental housing. It does not apply to condominiums or VRDs or other kinds of things. It's specifically for rental housing.
It's a good clarification.
Yeah, and I think it is. It's already incorporated into the code provisions, but I want to make sure in our resolution it's there. So along the same lines, this would only apply within the city of Newport. And actually, because of the way it's drafted, it only applies to certain properties within the city of Newport. And if you may recall, those properties are specifically zoned for this multiple family rental housing. That's number one. Number two, they have to be within a certain distance of a transportation opportunity, and that's defined in the ordinance, and basically that's based on our own transit system out there in order to qualify. There's some other requirements, green building requirements, a percentage of the properties being available for defined low income, that. And this is intended to add more affordable housing to the stock of what's available in the city of Newport. So all those limitations are adopted if we go ahead with this resolution. Again, the taxing rate for the districts that the county has, general, extension, transportation, and animal services, combined with the city general and urban renewal exceeds the 51%, so it would allow for the exemption that is available. Now, this exemption is not a total exemption from property taxes. So, for instance, the underlying land is not exempt from taxation. This also has a limited duration. It's only available for 10 years. It can be extended if there is qualifying low-income housing that's involved with this for an additional period of time. All those particular provisions are spelled out in the code provisions and in state law, which we've been adopting here. The one thing that has a little bit different here is, even though it's not within the code provisions, I did think the county should have an opportunity to review applications. There is a little bit of discretion in granting these things. The city has a process that runs it through their planning commission and then up to the city council in order to grant these exemptions. But I thought that we should be at least apprised of what that's going on and an opportunity to comment on applications if we have any concerns or questions. So I'm writing to this, and I have checked with the city that they will provide us with a courtesy copy of any application that comes through when they are received, so that we'll at least get that application and we can review those. The other provision is that this is again...
But that is not part of the prior...
It's not in their city code. It's not in their ordinance.
Okay. So going back, though, to the exemption for nonprofit housing, we would not...
No, because there's it's a straightforward, it's non-discretionary. It's a checklist. You either meet the requirements or you don't.
Right.
All those things are set by state law.
So there's no discretion.
This one has a little bit of discretion in it. It's built in. And so I thought, you know, it's great. We're gonna let the city exercise the discretion, you know, to do that. But we would at least like to be apprised of what the applications look like. So.
Very good.
Then the other thing, again, same kind of thing, is this would terminate in June of 2028. An opportunity for the board to review at that time the efficacy of this particular program and extend it if so desired the board at that time. And then any project that qualified prior to June 30th, 2028 and has additional time for that 10-year duration of the exemption would continue on, but it had to have already qualified prior to June 30th, 2028. And again, I'm looking for a consensus to move this forward, and we'll get it on next week's agenda.
I'm okay. I agree.
Okay.
Great. We'll bring these back to you.
So we move down to reports, and we have a Regional Accelerator Innovation Network, or RAIN, a report on its activities. Please introduce yourself.
All right. Good morning. Caroline Bauman, Economic Development Alliance of Lincoln County.
David Youngentob, Coastal Venture Catalyst with Oregon RAIN.
Okay.
Take it away?
Yeah.
Very good. I just wanted to point out so that the records were, just so the records are totally correct, my last name is spelled T-O-B at the end. I just thought it would be helpful to point that out. But good morning, County Councilor Belmont, Commissioner Thompson, Commissioner Hunt, and city staff. Really, really excited to be here today on behalf of Oregon RAIN to tell you about the last year of the project that we executed on the Mid-Coast, including Lincoln County. And thank you for your financial support of the work we conducted. Tell you what we planned to do, what we did, and what we see as an opportunity to continue our work on the coast. And thank you for your support. So I was hired into this position a year ago. I started November 1st, so it's almost about a year. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what we've got to do and what I've been able to do in this experience. But this presence of RAIN on the coast began back in October of 2015. RAIN held its first call of interest meeting for the entire Mid-Coast area. Just for a convenient venue, it was held down in Florence, and 87 people stretching as far up from Lincoln City came down and expressed an interest in learning about RAIN services and what we can do to help bring people, programs, and capital to entrepreneurs. And that I'm excited to tell you about how that initial meeting has grown into the work we got to do the last year. So just as a reminder and overview, RAIN, we are a priority project of the Governor's Solution Center. We're a private company, nonprofit, that helps catalyze people and programs to advance the startup ecosystem in the communities that we work with. And we also help entrepreneurs find avenues to achieve funding for their venture, whether it's conventional debt, or pitching to investors or seeking grants and other resources. That's the third thing that we catalyze. We operate in Lane, Lynn, and Benton County, and of course Lincoln County, which is why I'm here today. I just want to give you an overview of our partners. These are public and private organizations that we work with to make our services available to entrepreneurs, whether it's through funding partnerships. I've highlighted the partners up here in Lincoln County that have provided either in-kind services or financial support to bring our services here to entrepreneurs in Lincoln County. So again, just want to keep thanking you for that help. And of course, I want to thank my close friend and collaborator and partner on this, Caroline Bauman. Caroline's been instrumental in helping me hit the ground running the last year, learn influential people in Lincoln County to connect with, and just kind of navigate the public and private stakeholder landscape. So thank you for that, Caroline.
You're welcome.
All right, so an overview of what we said we'd do this year. Hire and mentor a venture catalyst, who's turned out to be me. So Caroline Cummings, who is my supervisor and our senior venture catalyst for RAIN, and she accomplished that task, hiring me. We plan to launch and support a pre-accelerator program, which I'll tell you a little bit about. In a moment in Lincoln County, and launch and support a mentoring program in Lincoln County. Host meetups and seminars to basically aggregate and educate entrepreneurs in Lincoln County. Tracking our budget and doing all the kind of typical things that healthy organizations do, reporting our progress to funders, and maintaining a database of the entrepreneurs we help and mentors who we engage with, and just meet all the minor goals that were agreed upon between RAIN and the underwriting counterparties that contracted us in. Okay, so I want to give you a little context. This has been basically a little bit of a westward expansion for RAIN. Our two main or chief nodes lie in Corvallis and Eugene. So you can see that on the right side of the slide, where we have partnerships with both Oregon State and University of Oregon. And each of those nodes of RAIN are autonomous branches of our organization. They have their own additional separate staff, unrelated to me and the project I do on the coast. And they conduct accelerators, or kind of multi-month boot camps for startup companies that are getting ready to scale. We, out here on the coast, this last year brought what we call pre-accelerators to both Florence and Lincoln County, or more of a 12-week kind of topic-driven boot camp. And I'll tell you a little bit more about what happened in the pre-accelerators. So there's a 12-week format broken up into 6 2-week sessions, and each one of those 6 sessions we had a speaker, a seminar, a mentorship meeting, a period of about 10 days where the enrolled entrepreneurs conducted legwork to apply the teachings from the seminar and the speaker, report back to their peers and mentors, and kind of rinse and repeat and go about the wheel again. And so some of the speakers we brought in were pretty awesome people to have. I was really happy to bring in the picture on the center left. You can see in the yellow jacket, that's Angela Jackson, who is the co-fund manager of the Portland Seed Fund. She came in and talked about competition. Up in the top right, you can see a mentoring session. Russ Pearson, who is the dean of LCEC, sitting with his back in the center of the picture. And on the far right, Charles Wilson, CEO of a company called Cricket Flowers out of Portland. And then down in the right, that's a picture of actually an angel meetup where we invited people who are interested in learning about what it means to be an angel investor and invest both your time and your expertise and your personal money in startup companies. And we had 9 high net worth individuals from the coast come and join us for that. So that was fun.
So could you clarify that an angel investor is defined as who?
So an angel investor is someone who invests their own personal money in a startup company. And, as far as who qualifies to be an angel investor in terms of the eyes of the SEC, it's someone who's a high net worth individual. So they either earn over $200,000 a year for some period of years. I think it's like 3. You have to have earned that amount of income. Or you have a net worth of $1 million outside the value of your home. And then it gets complicated if you look at couples versus,
So again, then, you said there were 9 angel investors in attendance.
9 folks came to a call and interest meeting to learn about angel investing. And that was held by...
How many angel investors were there?
There were 9 people that were interested in learning about angel investing. And it was hosted by Mark Manley, who's our executive director of RAIN, and Caroline Cummings, who's our senior venture catalyst. They also both co-managed the W2, which is a venture fund based out of Corvallis.
Okay, well, I guess what I'm trying to clarify is,
were the nine people there to learn how to become an angel investor, or were they there to identify people who were angel investors that might invest in their project?
It was an effort to do outreach and identify high net worth people who might be interested in investing with other angel investors, to learn about that process and learn about opportunities to invest.
I was there, and I would say the latter.
Yeah.
People like, you know, there was a banker who made a presentation about, you know, investing. And
but these wouldn't be typical companies a bank would lend to.
No, that's why they need angel investors.
Right.
They're, yeah.
Right.
They're pre-revenue. They don't have, right, you know, 2 years of financials. They need someone to take the big bet on them early to give them some resources to get in market and see if there's a market there. And that person's rewarded with an equity stake in their company.
Right. Okay, go ahead.
It was very exploratory.
Yeah, it was an outreach effort for RAIN to identify people whom we could activate and make more capital available to entrepreneurs.
Okay.
Okay, so I also partner closely, you know, not only with the Economic Development Alliance of Lincoln County, but with the Chamber of Commerce and the Newport Chamber, the Lincoln City Chamber of Commerce, and the Newport Chamber of Commerce got to present to both of their luncheons in the last year, I think twice. And Dave Price has been an awesome partner over at OCCC and SBDC. Forgive me, the lower right image is supposed to be the SBDC for Lincoln County, not Lane County. And that was where we held our pre-accelerator. It was over at OCCC. Great partner there in offering us rooms and technology and projectors. So, you know, you're probably wondering, okay, who did you help? What companies? So six companies entered our pre-accelerator, which was held between March and June. And we only were planning or agreed to at least find four. So I was happy to overserve by 50%. So just to give you a quick overview, Truffle Tris Farm makes a sustainable, compostable root pod for aquaponics farmers to start their plants in, replaces a plastic, you know, non-compostable alternative. Mel Scott Reef, that's the surf challenge up in Lincoln City. John Force has aspirations to get technology up to broadcast the competition live all over the world rather than be an event that you have to see in person. SailStream is a company that, kind of like the way Google helps ad vendors place ads on other people's websites, SailStream is a technology that helps people that play video games online, and thousands and millions of people watch other people play video games. It's called esports. It's like one of the fastest growing sports in the world. So they have a platform to connect competitive video gamers with people that want to watch them, and then generate data about who's watching so that you know, advertisers can promote ads to those people that are relevant to them. Lincoln City Treasure, that's Lincoln City Councilman Riley Hoagland's company, and they make a adventure bag that clips on your hip, kind of like something that could help you collect mushrooms or sea glass or shells, and you take whatever beautiful thing you find home with you and leave the mess on the beach or on the trail. Lower middle is Smart Cat Box, a company down in Waldport. They have a compostable, non-toxic alternative to traditional kitty litter, which apparently can make cats very sick. And Stony River Sinkers is a Yahats company that makes lead-free fishing weights for bobber dogger fishermen. So they are non-toxic, and they help them catch more fish and snag less often. So we're looking at Toledo, Lincoln City, Newport, Lincoln City, Waldport, and Yahats as far as geographies that we're touching in Lincoln County. So we're pretty happy about the diversity. As far as successes, that's Jesse Dolan, CEO of Stony River Sinkers, the Yahats company. Had an opportunity to coach him up personally when he went and competed at the Willamette Angel Conference in May in a speed pitch competition, which had 45 applicants and 7 competitors selected for the finals. And he won first prize, $3,500 for his pitch. So it was really awesome to see him put the work in and take that victory. And he was competing against startups from anywhere in the state, not just on the coast. SailStream, the company I mentioned that helps competitive online video gamers present ads to their viewers. We've been providing them executive coaching on acquisition and negotiations. Their product is already live, and they're talking to companies kind of in the Midwest and the East Coast that are bigger and larger in the esports industry about how, you know, they can add value to what those companies are doing. So that's pretty awesome. We're looking at maybe a software company having a milestone event and a return to a Newport founder. So Mr. Hoagland, Lincoln City Councilman Hoagland, with his bag, he was marketing basically B2B, traveling up and down Lincoln County and asking stores if he could get it, you know, for sale on their shelf. And we coached him up on doing some digital marketing tests. And he posted, a link to purchase his bag in an outdoor adventure, like hikers Facebook group, which had like, 20,000 members in this group. And he sold 40 bags in just an hour, just doing that, like posting something once. So we're seeing successes with the entrepreneurs when we help them look at different ways to market their product, create awareness, and reach customers. So just some kind of overview numbers. Mentors from five counties came to Lincoln County. That's Jesse Dolan on the left, the Yahats entrepreneur. And on the right is Nathan Lilligard, who is the program manager of the Lundquist Center of Entrepreneurship down in Eugene at the U of O. And if you count up the total number of hours that were, and this is combined, I want to point out, for Florence and Lincoln County, but if you, roughly ballpark cut it in half, the total time volunteered by these mentors was over $32,000, so roughly $16,000 for Lincoln County. These are just some summary numbers for attendance to the six speaker events that we had in the pre-accelerator. We had 48 folks from the community, including the enrolled entrepreneurs, come. We had three meetups outside of the pre-accelerator. We had a speed pitch event and a couple coffee meetups, and had 21 folks come to those. There's the numbers for the angel investor meetup. The fifth column, coastal pre-accelerators, that's just, it's not supposed to say attendance, it's supposed to say six sessions. We had six speakers. And then demo day, we had a combined day to celebrate the work of those six companies I told you about in Lincoln County and five others from Florence, and that was down at the Florence Event Center on June 21st, and we had 120 people come, including a number of our stakeholders. Caroline Bauman was there. Jason DeBerry-Lewis from the Governor's Solutions Center came down and talked about why rural entrepreneurship is important at the state level. And it was a great day to hear about the experience of all the entrepreneurs and their progress and what help they needed to kind of continue marching down their path towards hitting their goals and milestones. So we also had some fun experiences meeting the governor. You can see, again, Jesse Dolan's there on the left. This was down actually in Florence, but we had some folks there representing Lincoln County and just talking about rural entrepreneurship on the coast in general. Kate Brown's pretty excited about what we're doing. She sees economic development in rural areas as very, very key to Oregon's future. And she thinks that it's this is where jobs are going to be created in our future. Okay, so what's next? I think on a high level, one of the strengths of Lincoln County presents a unique challenge. So my work the last year was split into these two markets. Florence, population 10,000. One town. Lincoln County, population how many?
46.
Yeah, 46. So four times as large. A lot more driving. Lincoln City, out to Toledo, down to Walport, down to Yahats. It's my belief that there's so much more untapped potential here, and having split two markets at a position where I was three-quarter time, so each market is getting less than a half time of my attention, it was easier to get higher. It was easier for me to tap into the Florence market because it was smaller, if that makes sense. Like, having less time to explore somewhere bigger with more people and a kind of like fractured community. We have folks down at the port, we have folks down in Nye Beach, we have folks and all these down in Toledo, folks up in Lincoln City. Like, it was just tough to be top of mind and really have the high amount of awareness among everyone and stay in contact with everyone. So I see there's an enormous opportunity for us to dig in Lincoln County and have, whether it's me devoted full-time to Lincoln County or we bring on a second person that's on over half-time as much as potentially three-quarter time, I think that we can get a lot more results. And we've already have had results the last year. So in any event, I think that there's a clear opportunity to reveal and prospect new entrepreneurs to add to that list of those six companies we helped, and just continue to build an interest and a culture of entrepreneurship in Lincoln County, and make people very clear that you can start a company in Lincoln County that can serve customers all over the country, and you can maintain headquartering it here. You don't have to leave. You don't have to go down to San Francisco. You don't have to go to Seattle. And kind of auxiliary to that, is just continuing to network and build out mentors that we can engage and connect entrepreneurs to, and continue to do the capital activation stuff, seek high net worth individuals who might be interested in doing angel investing. So that is it. I want to thank you for your support the last year. We look forward to your continued support. We should have our 2018 final project proposal to you by the end of the year, 2017. And I'm happy to field any questions. Thanks for your attention.
Well, the question I would have is, how do you work with, interact with the small business development centers?
Sure. So SBDC has training classes that are really effective for helping entrepreneurs learn kind of hard skills like just balancing their budget or putting together a personnel plan. We definitely come into contact with folks that fit the SBDC model of being a local regional business that doesn't have an aspiration to address national markets, and we happily refer them to Dave Price, you know, to Russ Pearson down in Florence. What we like to do also is hear from SBDC, hey, we had someone come in contact with us, they want to do an app, they want to do, you know, a software company, and can you help them learn about how they can, you know, address national markets?
Yeah, and my point, or I guess I'd make the point, that I don't see those two groups, your group and the SBDC, as competitors.
No, absolutely not.
I think you can work collaboratively and help different businesses in different phases of their development. And I think both RAIN and the Small Business Development Center are really very effective in helping businesses grow, help businesses become a reality and create jobs. So I think both programs are great.
I agree with you.
That's all.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Reach out anytime if you have any further questions.
Thank you. I know where to find you.
Yeah, you got it.
All right.
See ya.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time. County Councilor Bellman.
Thanks for your time.
Here you go.
Okay.
See
you.
Okay.
We move down to Commissioner's reports.
I'll just comment that I will be at the Oregon Transportation Commission meeting tomorrow afternoon in Silverton to be a member of a panel consisting of the Area Commission of Transportation Board chairs talking about the STIP State Transportation Improvement Plans. Look forward to representing the county there.
So I'll just mention I was plan board with our planning director yesterday talking about ocean planning. It was the rulemaking process that was going on, and we did that. But afterwards, we had a little bit of time. We went over to room 50 in the basement of the Capitol and listened a little while on the hearing on carbon tax credit. And there's been other hearings, but we just happened to be there to a little bit of extra time. And it is there. I don't say it's moving forward because they're doing the hearings, and then we'll see whether or not in this session. But it was interesting in that it was a couple of coastal people there, but the room was full of lobbyists and Portland people. So it's something that we want to keep an eye on as this develops. We don't want to get late for the bus. That's the direction things move, and we want to be engaged in how it affects the coast. There's a lot of interesting things to be talked about in the rural part of the state on tax credits and timber and forestry, and now the big issue is fire. I mean, if you change forest practices and you have timber and it burns, where are you going to be in this process? And it's going to be a whole aspect that hasn't been discussed yet, that because of the burning of so much federal forest land in this last year, it's a conversation that needs to be had.
So if I may ask, Commissioner, the short sessions are typically to tweak existing legislative issues. This is a major issue. Do you think, what are your thoughts as far as the likelihood of it actually being moved forward during this short session?
Well, the thoughts are based on leadership. That's one thing I've learned in the legislature. It's all about who has the gavel and what issues the leadership sees is the most important. And even though a short session, we've seen several major issues fly out of short sessions. So I think it's all about leadership at this point. And that's changed, of course, with elections and things that haven't yet.
Sounds like we'll see.
Yeah, that's. I'm dodging your question.
No, it wasn't put you on the hot seat. It's just I just was interested in your.
No, no one can tell. It's all about it.
That's probably the best answer.
Okay,
nobody knows.
So, if you're seeing nothing else, do we have any constituent input? There's no one in the room.
We have staff in the room.
Yeah. And next. Wednesday, October 25th at 9:30 in this room will be the next Board of Commissioners hearing. With that, we adjourn.